Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Ruth E. Walker, poet, novelist, playwright, and teacher. Welcome back, Ruth.
Thank you.
So what are you working on now? I know you have more than one thing on the go.
Yes, that's true. I'm working on final edits of a young adult science fiction novel, and I have the next book to come. It's bubbling on the back burner, and it's a historical fiction or a creative nonfiction or maybe a play. I don't even know for sure.
Sounds interesting. Well, tell us about the YA novel first.
Well, I entered the annual Muskoka Novel Marathon in 2014. It's a 72-hour novel writing marathon to raise funds for literacy. I'm a pantser, not a plotter, so the timed restriction lent itself, in my mind, to genre writing with structured plot expectations and so on. There'd be no time to wander behind an interesting character or two. And I've always enjoyed reading great science fiction. Young adult seemed fairly simple to my naive self, and I thought it would be something to take on. Ha! Should have known better. It's a lot more complicated. Nonetheless, I actually won the best YA novel category at the marathon, which got me a Muskoka chair and a feedback edit with esteemed editor Peter Carver.
Oh, from Red Deer Press.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Is it finished? Is it out of with publishers?
I'm just working on the very end of it, and it's taken me a year to finish the end of it. I have had more than one agent at pitch sessions express an interest, so I'm hopeful that I'll find a home when it's done.
Well, maybe give us a quick intro to it and maybe an excerpt.
Okay. The one thing I learned is that you need to read what you're going to write and learn from what authors in that genre do. So I know that YA science fiction needs to be fast-paced with a central character that fascinates readers early on. So I created a murderous teen named Garnet on a world that is dying, up to my challenge by making it present tense and first person in the narration. And you can tell me what you think of of that process. One, outside main station. I keep low, tight to the ground. Gallows' voice fills my head. Doesn't matter if you scrape your knees, cry-face female. Count on your senses. Use your nose, ears. Your eyes can trick you, make you feel safe, even sometimes when... Don't think about Gallo. Grip the rocks and pull through the dirt, and don't be like a strong and true Tark. Be like the useless Terrians. Be an animal. Lesser sun is still high, but soon prime sun will set, and I haven't got enough to fill my towel. I stop, listen, lift my nose just high enough to catch what's on the air. Undeserving animal, close by, the sweat stink as clear as blessed leader's vision. I hold my breath, wait, and then I hear it breathing, and it's breath of a single one in struggle, wanting air, but trying to keep still, knowing something's near. True tell, I'm coming anyway. I raise up enough to sight the territory in front and to the sides. The blast here was really big. Dirt kicked out in a wide circle. Rocks split, their edges jagged and raw. Just ahead, a tree spreads its twisty roots sideways toward the sky. Stones and clumps of gray dirt all caught up in its grasp. I close my eyes. It's so long since there's been a tree in this part of the territory. So long since the rain. So long. A living tree? I open my eyes. Nothing of life here. Except there. Past the tree, blown back to the surface. Movement. Just one undeserving, I'm sure of it. And I am off, keeping low but circling in. I slip quick between rocks, dirt piles. Skirt the places the flesh strippers have already been. The whiff of drying bones in the air. On my blade side, prime sun is edging closer to the ground. So little time. I remember to listen, stay true, but ready to race back to the track and back to the battalion. Flesh strippers sometimes come before full sunset, but if I leave this animal to live, I'll have no true tell for sub-leader Callan. He'll pull at my neck and beat me. I'll be shamed. I rub the back of my neck. I can't help it. The skin is raw there. I don't know how I'll keep from crying this time, and then they'll all laugh and call me useless. Cry face female, two eyes, dead weight. Send me back to old cook's kitchen, to killing crawlies and pulling weeds from the pantry grounds. I won't go back there. I will prove I can be as strong and true as a teamer. A female, yes, but a strong and true female. On the far side of the deep crater, the ground moves. I press forward until I'm so close to the edge I could reach out two times my length and touch it. And true tell, it's where the breathing is, and undeserving, I'm sure of it. I hold my breath and risk a smile. I will not return my picking sack empty and my tell full of dull and barren words. My blade slides slow and silent from its sheath, like Gallo taught me. Nothing weaker than dropping your blade, Garnet, warns an undeserving that you're coming. And here, he always grinned at me before going on. And it makes a clean blade filthy. They shit out there, you know. No shame. Drop their shitty leggings and drop their loads. Animals. The first time he said that, I made a mistake. I said that even if animals don't have a camp land and battalion walls like us, they might have latrines. Gallo grabbed my face with his hard fingers. Animals don't have walls, they don't have camps, and they don't even know enough to bury their shit. He slapped me once and then moved on, so I knew not to say that again.
Delightful. Flesh strippers and all kinds of things.
Quite yummy, yes, I know.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the YA novel. Now, what's the other project that you mentioned, this creative nonfiction or
play,
memoir or play or whatever? Tell us a bit more about that.
It's actually inspired by a book written by my great-great-great-grandfather, Edward R. Umfraville. He worked for the Hudson's Bay Company in York Factory from 1771 to 1782. He wrote a book, The Present State of the Hudson's Bay, as a kind of expose of the HBC, the Hudson's Bay Company, and their business practices in Canada. And he viewed them as wasteful, short-sighted, and interestingly improper in its treatment to the indigenous peoples. It was a bestseller in its time, and last June I traveled to the National Library in Ottawa and archives and actually got to hold a copy in my hands, and that is why the book is bubbling. I've written poems and short creative nonfiction piece inspired by what I've read of the book online, but actually holding the book in my hand, turning the pages, oh my God, there were things I found that, yeah, just, I know I've got a lot of work ahead of me, but it'll be very exciting.
Yeah, personal connection.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, it was thrilling.
You've already done some writing.
Yes.
On this project.
Yes, I have.
And I understand it takes the form of a poem. Tell us more, maybe read to us.
Sure. This is actually from a vignette. In his book, he had a number of vignettes or scenes of circumstances that happened. And this is about a tragedy that happened up there. And it's called Nights on Hudson Bay, Day 1. Larder provisions scarce, we are dispatched to hunt partridge, set off on a day warm enough for me to question our sense. Young Thompson and Ferrant, full of spirit both, anticipate our first shot. I tire of seal, game all sinew, winter ills cling like bloated ticks. I long for Maureen's tea, the songs and drums of our Orkney village. We pitch at the iced shore, a fire warming the lean-to, gin aflame in our hearts. The dogs circle as dogs do, nose to tail and tight against the sleds. Yet in truth it remains too warm, and the stars never more brilliant. Day 2. We cross the ice, the dogs pulling each, fast and excited. I almost lose Ferrant's words in the rush of wind, nearly miss the catch in his voice. Ross, I fear we are moving. A teasing mistress, this frozen land has lured us on a temporary bridge. We halt the sleds, look back to watch the shift of the distant shore, the smoke of water now between our frozen raft and the rise of the land. Turn and turn again, it is the same. Wherever eyes cast, gray washes between our drifting white island and land. We are moving into the sea. Ferrant almost weeps with Thompson slack-jawed, near to surrender, both. Wait, I tell them, for the tide. Surely the ebb and flow will bring us back. We ready our camp and pass the time speaking of home. Day 5. 3 days. Yipping dogs, adrift on ice, and the ache of appetite. The last of the cakes gone, sugar meted out to melt on eager tongues. I am not sure which will go first, the ice or the too warm winter air. the dogs know. They return to old ways, gnaw on harness, and dream of escape and full bellies. Overhead, geese pass too distant and swift to ready the shot. The birds know. Fly past once more, close enough to hear the mockery in their call. Day 6. Ebb and flow teases madmen with the shore. We rush to make the leap. Ferret slips, spills body and soul. We rush to warm him. The ice is breaking off. Dogs, sled, and nearly all drift away and leave us. Day 7. In the night, Ferret fades. Thompson and I remain, eyes too dull to weep. A seal rises from the sea, heaves onto the ice, and stares, waiting. Thompson urges me to shoot. I cannot. The creature's eyes look too familiar. The seal knows. The truth of January returns, a let in the wind. The cold falls like frozen mist. Thompson's hands now so swollen and stiff, my mitts refuse his flesh. Blue moonlight kisses the horizon as he breathes his last. Day 8. This prison flow edges, then meets the shore, makes a bridge to home. Landing so close to the factory, I breathe wood smoke. Delirious, my mistake is left for right. Travel from, not toward. Too late, I grasp the air, attempt a bed, pray dark gives way to light. Day 9. So cold that hours consume a mile. Asleep, I press frozen steps forward. My once lost sled dog, strangely now my companion, trails my pale shadow. Together we find the gates of York Factory, where fingers, toes, let go. My fellows gather coin to ease my loss. The factor offers none. I will leave behind all wrenched from me by this stark moor. I turn my face east to the sea, useless to feel regret.
Oh, how sad.
It is sad.
It is, yeah.
Lots of tragedies up there. Mm. And triumphs.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much for reading it to us, Ruth, and indeed for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Look forward to the publication of your two new projects. But in the meantime, where can listeners buy Living Underground?
It's certainly available online through Chapters or Amazon as both a trade paperback and an e-book. Blue Heron Books, Uxbridge, has paper form available. And it's also available directly from Seraphim Editions, my publisher.
Wonderful. And listeners, if you'd like to connect with us here on Word on the Hills, please send your comments, queries, or suggestions to our website, wordonthehills.com, and leave your comments there. We'd love to hear from you and welcome anything you have to say on our programming. And also, while you're there, you might like to listen in on some of our archived broadcasts. Thanks for tuning in to the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.